Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is recorded for educational and inspirational purposes only. The views expressed are those of the hosts and guest and do not constitute professional advice. We make no representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the content. And please seek independent assessment from a qualified professional. For the past couple of months, the world has been weighing in on Australia's under 16 social media regulation. For those living under the changes, it's a moment in Australian history that's affecting families right now. My guest today, Susie Butts, is a somatic psychotherapist, psychoeducator, and coach. Susie has a rare gift. She makes complex neuroscience simple, practical, and deeply human, helping people understand stress, reclaim safety, and reconnect with who they are. I was compelled to record this conversation with Susie after reading a powerful reflection on what's unfolding now. As of December 10, social media access has been removed for under 16s, and regardless of where you sit on the policy debate, Susie is witnessing something very real in her clinical work. She's seeing teenagers in distress, parents unsure how to help, families navigating grief, anger, and a loss of identity, particularly for young people who felt seen, connected, and themselves online. Susie reminds us that this moment isn't just about screens or platforms, it's about nervous systems, regulation, and yes, connection. It's about how we, as adults, show up when our children are overwhelmed by change they didn't choose and can't control. Hello, Susie, and thanks for joining me. In a previous conversation with me, you shared a little about your childhood in a small regional New South Wales town. How do you think that environment contributed to your life today?
I always thought I had a nice childhood, like mum and dad got on well and all sorts of things. But it's only in hindsight that I realised mum had some issues. Maybe it was ADHD, who knows, and some background trauma. We're pretty 90% sure there was background trauma there. So she wasn't available emotionally to us. Dad was, which was great. And that's, I think, part of how I became who I am. But I realised as a small child, I was constantly looking for affection and love, constantly. And possibly mum had been sexually abused as a child. So when dad would give, particularly me, any sort of love, he was instantly called off. And so it was like, oh, but I was just getting some of my needs met. Oh, well, I'm not deserving of that. And I had no awareness of that as a child because we all, as children, we accept what's happening around us as normal. And I think it's part of why then when I became a young adult, I ended up marrying a violent man because I knew mum was the stronger person in their relationship. And so I thought, I'm strong. I need to find a man who's stronger than me. But I didn't realise I was inviting in domestic violence. And so it was only in hindsight I realised after we'd divorced at the grand old age of 25, 26, somewhere around there, I'd married my mother in a much stronger form. And so I then lived in my head and was working in IT. So I just was, yeah, no, the world's fine. No, I'm good. Until I realised I lived here somewhere and I was totally disconnected from my body. And during that time, particularly in the year after my ex-husband and I split up, I had huge accidents every weekend. The people I worked with finally went, could you just stay home and keep yourself in cotton wool? And that was my first inkling that when there's been background trauma. Your body is trying to get you to do something to work it out. So then in my 40s, I retrained as a psychotherapist, and I thought about going and doing psychology at uni, but I already knew how to come from my head. And I wanted to come more from my heart. So I found a really rigorous training course that taught us everything that psychology teaches, but brings in much more body-based approach, much more somatic approach. And we had to do our own therapy. You know, there was a minimum 20 hours of therapy we all had to get every year as part of the course. So at uni with psychology, that doesn't happen. You learn how to treat others, but you don't have to work on yourself. And I know by the end of that course, I was starting to get an inkling of just how much I didn't know about me. And so for the last 20 years over, I've now been learning more and more about me. And it's only really recently that I've realized I was constantly searching for love and attention.
I recognized a similarity in the story about your mum. My mother wasn't really available emotionally, and I wasn't hugged or told I was loved as a child. And it does reveal its head through adolescence, you know, your teenage years into becoming an adult, where you go out seeking to fill that gaping hole in your life, in your emotions, you know, and your heart. So I can definitely identify with that. And I've actually read a lot of research from a cellular perspective about the body storing emotions and feelings. So you can imagine what sort of effect that's going to have on us as children, particularly.
Yes, exactly. This is what happens to children. And I talk about it as a developing where we're developing from pre-birth to 25 when our clever front brain finishes its development. But really, we're not adults till about 28 to 30. Anytime our needs weren't met appropriately, a little part fractured off and goes and lives in our subconscious. And we all end up with what I call the team on the bench. And so then later in life, when the situation mirrors when they were created, that one can come up and take control of my body. And so now I don't understand why I'm reacting the way I do, or I will normalize it. You know, you'll hear people say, I was belted as a kid and there's nothing wrong with me. Of course I'm going to belt my kids. And you go, no. That's your wounded inner child going, I didn't get my needs met, so I'm not going to meet my children's needs. And you go, ooh. And that's part of what has blown me away in the last couple of days since this has gone live about children under 16 being banned from social media. I'm starting to see parents reacting from their wounded children.
It's sort of natural in a way, because we all want to protect our children. And given that the research has shown there's so much damage being done to generations now of children being exposed to adult content before their prefrontal cortex was actually developed enough to cope with it. So, Susie, how are you seeing this manifesting, and what do you think we can do to actually help parents and teachers out there with this?
Okay, so a good one is the example of the 14-year-old client who said, it's not fair, they're being mean to me, and you know, I'm going to miss out on a whole bunch of things. And I'm hearing parents say, this is really unfair on our children, and they're going to miss out on this, and they're missing the whole damage that's been done. So you can see they're coming from their child self rather than their adult self. So this is where we say, even if you're aware that you're a bit triggered by your teen or preteen's reactions, we need to regulate our own nervous system first, because that will help us get back into an adult. Because I can't believe there's any parent doesn't see the damage, one, of things like being exposed to the level of content, but two, that whole, we know there is so much research now showing that you expose developing brains to too much screen time and it affects the brain's development. And it's like, would you force your preteens to drink alcohol? You know, we've actually banned that now because we know it damages their developing brain. But we're still going, oh no, screen time's okay. And yet it's having some major impact. So I don't know how to get that education out to parents. All I can come with is, can you downregulate your nervous system before you deal with your kids? Can you find a way to get into your own adult self?
I was speaking with a new connection in the US earlier today, and we got to this point in the discussion where we were looking at the way we were raised in a totally different time, and often with our parents in business, forced into speaking and interacting with strangers. Really? Developing these communication skills that I think we're losing in these generations because they're virtually meeting people or they're connecting with the people they do know in real life, but on a totally different communication level. How do you think we can support children now and teens to move from that mindset into focusing on something that's a little bit more productive?
It's not easy. I'm going to admit that right up front. Because again, why did our parents, you know, this older generation that I know I'm from, because they came from a survival model. And when they got overwhelmed, they said, kids, get out of the house, go away. And we know that's not always good for kids. And so current parents are trying to be there and to be everything for their children. And they get overwhelmed. So when the child is sitting with a screen, suddenly they've got, oh, I've got a few minutes to myself. I don't know, but I think we have to make it a thing of how do we help parents reclaim themselves while still keeping it safe for their children and letting their children discover themselves. And it's often about sitting with the discomfort. Okay, because that's something we'd thrown out. We would keep saying, that person said something and it's triggered me and they've got to stop saying that. And you go, it's my trauma, my stress. I have to downregulate my nervous system. Then I can ask them to probably, please don't repeat that. That was mean or nasty or whatever. But it's me who was triggered. So I've got to learn to look after me. There's generations that have never learned to do that. So it's a huge ask. And I think this is part of what we're facing and part of why it's also difficult, just particularly with this.
Where do you think the responsibility lies or accountability in relation to what the online platforms have become?
And this, I think, is what the government's trying to challenge and say to them, you guys have to accept some responsibility here and recognise there are children here and you've got to put some practices in place. I also agree with you about educating parents and help getting parents to educate their children about online safety. But so many adults don't know how to be safe online either. And so this is where we're in this transitional phase. You know, 50 years' time, parents are going to be way more savvy than our generation is now, or the parents who are there now. It's not easy, but I think the platforms do have to start to be a little bit more aware of what algorithms are running on their platforms.
This is something that I think not just children need to be protected from, but everybody. I mean, I don't like seeing harmful content. How do you think we can take back control? What's the best thing from your perspective in your coaching world to help people understand their power in this?
For me, when I get that in clients, I use gentle, challenging questions. So how would that look if that went to the nth degree? How do you enjoy when someone tries to control you? So even I want to go back to one of the comments you made before about the big organisations. And I know most of them subscribe to the Macca's model, cradle to the grave, customers. And you go, this is so wrong because it is taking away our free will. And that's one of the big ones I push when people really can't see it. I will get down to asking them, so do you think you're making valid, genuine choices for yourself? Or has all the advertising influenced you? And now I use it with social media and things as well. How do you feel when all of that content comes in on top of you because the algorithm is doing it for you? And do you enjoy that? And when you think back to your own childhood, would you like to have been exposed to all of that, or did you want parents to keep you safe? And often one simple one, because I've always said no technology in the bedrooms of children. I don't think it should be in parents' bedrooms either. But I used to do this with the teens when I was counselling them. Would you go and sleep down the main street of your town? They all look at me horrified. No. Why not? Because anybody could come up to me. Yeah. And it's the same when you have the internet on and your phone on overnight. You can't control who comes into your bedroom. So I talk about creating a sanctuary. We all have to have a sanctuary where the outside world can't reach us. And so I'm wondering if we can encourage parents to create a sanctuary for themselves and their children where they are more in control of what influence is happening in their house.
But we still have the television, and I used to use video cassette. It wasn't without its educational benefits, but it was just a simple cartoony video that gave me 30 to 45 minutes of time where they were eating their breakfast in front of something they love to watch.
And as a parent, you curated that because you knew it wasn't feeding them stuff you didn't want them to have.
I curate my platforms, and this is where empowering yourself with information helps. So if you see something you don't like, even if it's an ad or something annoying, you just close it down, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Don't just scroll past it, because if you even pause over it, the algorithm notices that and it's going to think, oh, she likes that, we'll give her more. If we don't educate ourselves as to how the algorithm works and what's happening behind the scenes, you're going to get what you get. I choose the people I connect with through values. I choose the content I see. I choose the content I share, and I make it considered, kind, generous, the type of information that doesn't offend people, that doesn't polarize people, that's not so controversial, but is still meaningful to developing a good relationship online. So how do you think people could consider that moving forward as well?
Okay, you've just come back to my pet topic. Because we have that amygdala in our brain. And it has one job from the moment we're born. Its job is to go, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? And that's its whole job. And really, if you look at us as human beings, we are designed to survive and to live. We're not designed for anything else. So we're designed to detect danger and to feed ourselves. Pretty basic, really. And that amygdala is what every single advertiser, person who wants you to buy a product, they are all triggering that amygdala. There was, I can't remember which person of which newspaper said, good news never made a paper sell. And so they know they've got to hit you. And same with the news on the telly or most of the stuff coming up. It has to be controversial. It has to be outrageous. It has to be something that will trigger your amygdala. So you go, what's that? We've all got to understand how often we are amygdala hijacked. And that then can give us a choice. Do I want to remain in this amygdala hijacking? Or do I want to calm my nervous system down, which allows me to make a choice that I click off that horrible part that's just turned up on my feed? If I'm overwhelmed, I don't notice it as much. And when you think about it, yes, we have this fabulous amygdala, but we don't have a corresponding structure in our brain to detect the good, the beautiful, the amazing, the awe and wonder. We have a little structure that processes that, but if I'm overwhelmed, I'm not picking up on the magnificent sunset or the wonderful things in life because I'm too busy going, but there's this and there's that and there's the other and I'm, oh, my, my, my. We've got to teach people how to downregulate their nervous system and how to introduce more bliss into their lives, because the more we can increase the bliss and downregulate the stress held in our bodies, the healthier we are, the better choices we make, the more, to me, the more the world is a nicer place. Because when I'm downregulated, I am compassionate and kind and caring. When I'm stressed, I disconnect, I distance myself. That's your problem. It's not mine. I don't have enough resources. So it comes back to, how do we all downregulate our nervous systems?
I love that, Susie. And while you were talking about that, I was thinking about, you were talking about adults. Imagine how unnerving that would be for someone who was 10. or 12 to be experiencing that online.
And that's exactly why I did that post. I want people to, adults, to downregulate their nervous system and then invite their child into that downregulated space, rather than letting the child escalate, because that's the other thing. Our clever front brain is like an anxious six-year-old child. It's never been set clear boundaries. We've told it it's amazing. It can do and think whatever it wants. But it will then sit there and tell scary stories, and it's like a child poking the amygdala, or it's like two children on the back seat poking each other. Okay, you know how that ends up. And our front brain consistently pokes our amygdala, and our amygdala says, here's some more stress resources. And so now we end up in a negative biofeedback loop. And if we're not aware of that, we think that's normal. The number of clients I have that go, oh no, I don't sleep well, I've got chronic insomnia. And I teach them how to stop poking your amygdala and then throw in some belly breathing, which will flood your body with serotonin. And that's why I put that into that article, because I want people to be starting to at least stop escalating the stress in your system, because 10-year-olds aren't meant to be exposed to this much. Their life's stressful enough. They're learning life. They don't need to take on all the adult rubbish. And so their reaction to this ban on social media is an amygdala response. So if we can get parents aware of that, parents downregulate, it's okay, we'll get through that. That then also leads them to a place of, you as a parent are teaching your child how to sit with discomfort. And isn't that a skill we all need as adults? And a lot of young adults don't know how to do this. And I'm just saying, this is an amazing opportunity for all of us to learn to downregulate and hand that skill on, rather than just letting that front brain keep poking that amygdala, and we just keep going more and more stressed.
Susie, your approach is refreshing to say the least, and I'm looking forward to following this through to its conclusion, because there has to be one. I'm hoping it's a more balanced discussion and that those companies now take pause to think about the impact they're having on humans worldwide.
I do too, Kim. I think it's vital. I find it particularly interesting that Mark Zuckerberg has never let his own children get onto devices and onto social media. And yet his main platforms, a couple of the big ones, admittedly, Meta introduced this a week early, but yeah, they should have done this years ago.
I think that was just to avoid the potential fine that is coming their way should they not be able to get these kids off. Susie Butts, it's a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, thanks, Kim. Thanks for your time.
Somatic psychotherapist and coach Susie Butts, with a powerful reminder that resilience isn't built through control, it's built through connection. What our children need right now isn't more explanations or even arguments. They need regulated adults, safe nervous systems, and someone who can sit with them in their discomfort and say, I'm here. Susie's framework, regulate, relate, then rationalise, gives parents and carers a way forward, not just through this social media transition, but through every challenge life will bring. You'll find links to Susie's work and her From Surviving to Thriving resources in the show notes. And if today's episode resonated, remember, when we help our children navigate something they didn't choose, didn't want, and can't control, we're teaching them how to handle the world. If you or your child are in distress, please ask for help. You can call any of the helplines, and you'll find all of those available to you on the government's website, or just simply search online.